listening to Down by the Bank, a Jacksonville Jaguars podcast with Corey, Derek, and JK3.
All right, welcome to Down by the Bank, affiliated with the Blue Wire Podcast Network. This is Corey.
Hey guys, what's up? It's Derek.
What's up, guys? It's JK3.
So we're back recording with the Jags sitting at a 2-9 record going into the game against the LA Rams this Sunday. We've been off for Thanksgiving, so we did not record after the San Francisco game. And now we're going to sort of catch up on that and the Atlanta game.
Man, let's go ahead and get let's talk about something exciting first before we get into misery. Okay. All right. Let's talk about something. Let's talk about the man Benjamin Purdy, man.
Before we go into that, are you a good news or a bad? Like when someone's like, there's good news and there's bad news, like which one do you like to hear first?
I like to hear the good news, man. I like to hear the bad news, okay? Because we already know the bad news. We know it's not even bad news. It's just it's horrible news. Okay? it's so bad. Yeah. Like just to even mention or talk about it. Let's every news, every sports radio, every podcast. Let's talk about it. We don't have receivers that separate. Okay, sometimes we get after the quarterback, and sometimes we don't. Yeah, the DBs are playing better according to PFF. There, da 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 da. All these metrics, all these numbers, all these graphs, all these things, but it doesn't matter because we're 2-9.
Derek, did you want to talk about the good stuff or what?
Yeah, so we go talk. You're about going the good deep, stuff, but I'm just saying, like, I just get sick of like all I. That's all I hear all dang day. So let's talk about some good stuff first. Let's talk about Benjamin Corey. You always we'll give a shout out to him. Corey's always stops by and walks by that guy. He's always, you know, texting, tweeting about it. Obviously, I've seen him down there at the stadium for years and at different events, too, not just at Jag games. So it's nice that, you know, what Corey's put together. That's awesome. That's what it's about. That's what it should be about. Positive things, man.
Yo, if this guy, if he gets to play the national anthem if he gets to play the national anthem at the stadium, oh my gosh. Like Jag, I know someone from the Jags brass is listening to it, but yo, if saxophone man, if they say now playing national anthem, Benjamin saxophone man Purdy, yo, I'm gonna lose my mind.
Yeah, that's funny. That is one of the suggestions that came up. Somebody said the halftime show. Somebody said ring the bell, I think.
He doesn't need to ring the bell. I don't think he can play the saxophone for that long during a halftime show. Like, so he's got one shot at this, and that's the national anthem. That's it.
The national anthem has
got to have a fire, like, flyover too. Like, it's got to be a really good flyover and a really good, you know, Jaguars, don't give him a preseason game. We need this guy, like, maybe home opener.
Right.
Home opener would be crazy.
Yeah. Or against the Titans. Somebody big.
Yeah.
Somebody big to get the fans really going.
Well, and the funny thing is, and maybe you guys knew his name, correct me if I'm wrong, I didn't even know his name until we put that tweet up and somebody shared an article from the Times Union in like 2016. Like
I thought his name was Sax O-Phone Man.
Oh,
stop it. Good one.
Well, we talked about him.
You're talking like he a kid. That man's been soothing us for loss after loss for I don't know how many years. And you talking soothing about us. Him like he's a character on Martin Saxophone Man, brother man, or something like that. No,
pick up the pieces.
Yeah. Oh geez, you need to stop. Well, stop.
If you recall, like we brought him up, I think Derek, like a ton of times since we started doing this in 2016. Like I think we've talked about him quite a bit, and just never. And I told somebody in on Twitter today that I felt horrible that I've never, since he's been doing this, apparently since the second season the Jags have been around, thought to ever ask for his name or have a conversation with him. So I feel kind of terrible about that, honestly, because he is sort of a staple to Jags home games. I mean, literally, I can remember, And tons of people wrote us this today, being a kid and seeing that guy. And I almost feel like he looks the same, too. It's like he's been the same guy the entire time. Isn't that wild?
It's insane how many people, like, where he's at and how many, like, how many venues, how many people recognize him. But it's, yeah, I mean, I saw him outside when I went and saw Hamilton. He was playing outside of Hamilton.
Oh, okay. All right.
So. Yeah, it's just part of the what we do have as a culture of a fan base. You know, he's part of that. Whether if it's your BCB guys or what is it, Teal Street Hooligan, that area, different tailgaters all throughout the game day experience. He's part of that. He is part of the culture of Jag fans, and he should be appreciated because he doesn't have to go out there every Sunday knowing good and well we're leaving mad. The last thing we want to do is stop and talk to another person, but there he is. Every Sunday, every home game, and so you definitely appreciate people like that because that's the kind of positive energy we need in life, just in general. But
sure. Well, just to give a heads up on sort of what we're thinking, and the link is I think it's pinned to the top of the Twitter profile now. I guess I'll leave it there even when this episode goes up. But there's a GoFundMe that we set up with a goal of 1,000. We're at 540 right now. We've only been up for like 8 hours or maybe even less than that. With the idea that, you know, we get him a gift card and then also a thank you note with all the comments that have been sent in so far on Twitter, which there's been a lot and a lot of good ones actually. And any comments that you may leave on the actual GoFundMe page, because you can put a comment on there too. And I've seen a couple of those. So the thought process is to do a gift card and then like a big note or a book of those notes all together to give to him. But the main thing that we're trying to get right now, and maybe we'll have this by tonight before this episode even comes up, is it'd be nice if anybody has a connection to him to get his contact information so that we might be able to coordinate this somehow. So that if anybody wants to be there to give him this, then, you know, we'll have an idea of like when he'll be near the stadium, what time and all that. Because the worst thing would be if we're shooting for December 19th to get there and he's not there for whatever reason. So, you know what I mean? That would be terrible. So,
dude,
I mean,
obviously, first game in like 26 years. He hasn't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you never know. So I would like to give him a heads up on it in some capacity, not all the details. We'll make it a surprise, but just to expect that fans will be there and maybe what time he gets there and stuff. I don't know, just to make it a little bit fun and let folks that have participated be a part of it if they want to. No, go ahead.
I was going to say my favorite tweet, and I've been laughing about it all day since he posted it. But the guy that he quoted our tweet and said, I think it was Juiceman 15, walk past saxophone man on the way to the bank, Jags lose, get stuck in downtown traffic to I-95/I-10, rinse and repeat.
Yeah, well, that's like Derek was saying. He's part of the whole thing, the whole deal when you're down there. So sometimes that's the whole deal is good, or sometimes just pieces of it are good. And he tends to be one of the things that's consistently good. So we have to cherish that. but yeah, lots of good participation, lots of good. And you don't have to contribute. I mean, if you don't have the means to do that this time of the year or whatever, you can just put a comment and we'll include that in the note in whatever capacity we put that together. So just jump on the Twitter page. If you want to be a part of that, let us know. I think it'll be a lot of fun. So that's the positive stuff that Derek wanted to lead with. Now, if you'd like to tune out the rest of the podcast, it's all negative from here.
Okay. Well, let's start off with the biggest negative. Notre Dame just hired a coach. It's Thursday at 10 o'clock. It looks like they hired a coach about an hour ago, their defensive coordinator. So Urban Meyer was not lying. He does want to stay and try to right the ship. So we are stuck with him for at least another season. That let's just start it off there. He's going to be around. He's going to try to make this thing work. And it really, really, it sucks. It really sucks, man, because there's some terrible football out there.
I didn't think that we would be at this position, you know, in this, like, this fandom position, you know, where we are right now. I thought that there would have been some bright spots and some things that, you know, we saw, which we have, but I haven't seen a coach unanimously want to, you know, or a fan base unanimously, you know, get after this a coach since Mularkey, honestly. And, you know, you would think that, you know, with Urban, with it being such a big name and some of the success that he has, I just don't understand what's going on. And I think it's just no one knows what he's going on, what's going on. He has no idea and no accountability of who's on the field and what's happening. And I think it's leading into the place. Like, the receivers don't know what they're doing. Jawan Taylor doesn't know when to block and almost getting our quarterback killed. And it's just a culture of just unknowing and no one. It's just so exhausting. Like, it really is just exhausting of just, you know, no account. The only accountability that at least Marone gave us accountability.
Yeah, right.
You know, at least we got that from him. At least, I mean, at least now we just get, I don't know. We just get puzzled looks and we get someone who is just has no idea what is going on and has that life comes at you quick look on his face.
Well, yeah. The bad part is, I mean, it's all bad. okay. It's all bad. It's all bad. But the part that just is really puzzling is just, don't you want to put a product on the field that competes to win on Sundays? You would think they would, front office. And like, if we had to really just like burn this whole thing down and start from scratch. Okay. Let's think about this, people. Okay. Khan's already shown that his a little bit of not an inability, but he picked up Balky, who was already here, part of a regime that just didn't know or didn't want or didn't even try to win, with some stupid decisions by you know, front office. So you pick another piece from that same group and make him the boss now. You hire a coach who's not proven at this level, and you kind of get disappointed with results. At some point, don't you think you need to burn it all up? Like, burn it all up and try again. Sometimes one thing, and we'll get away from the actual playing and all the other stuff, because everybody has already talked about that. Sometimes I wonder if owners don't want the aggressive, you know, proven coach or GM, because they want to feel like they have a sense of control. Because if you notice with your good teams and your good clubs, let's say the Steelers, for instance, you know, they're not leading, they're not knocking, blowing the doors off, but they're consistently in it every year. Okay. Because they put the right people in place to make the football decisions. And I'm not saying Khan's not around here making draft picks like Jerry Jones, but are you really making the best decision possible for the team to ensure that you have long-term sustainability? And some owners, they get it, and some owners, they have a mental block on it. That's where we would start. Forget, oh, let's get Herbs out of here and move on. No, because if Balky's still here, we're still going to have the same crap. Same crap, okay? He's part of that. Part of the old regime.
You gotta, I mean, Khan had the opportunity to clean shop. And you gotta just get everybody out of there. And I think Balky, he has some ties to that team that went to San Francisco, or excuse me, that team that was in San Francisco that went you know, to the championship. You know, he has a little bit of ties you know, there. But that roster was decimated like within like one or two seasons with all the talent that they had there. So it's he's not a relationship driven guy. The moves that they're making, and I just don't understand. You know, we hear all these things about, you know, Walker Little this, you know, Cisco that, and if these guys can't beat out, and or if Cisco can't beat out or isn't getting, you know, playing time against Andrew Wingard, I need to know why. And I think this is the best time of the season right now to really start thinking about and seeing where your players are and where they are, where you know, where we're going to go for them in the future. I think Tyson Campbell, you know, I'm still on the fence are more on the negative side of the fence with him. But I mean, he's come together the last couple games. Who's to say that, you know, Cisco gets some live fire and, you know, is, you know, outperforms and does better than Andrew Wingard, you know? And it's like, you have the opportunity to really start from ground level zero. And now you're in a position where I don't know what Balky's contract or what his status is, but is he able to be let go after this season?
Why not? I mean, there's so much the carousel right now can get crazy because the demand's there that you want to win. So why wouldn't you let him go? You pay him some money and you move on.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I look at it.
So yeah. If you're fine, if you didn't like the fact that Balky came over from the Dave Caldwell front office, knowing that Urban didn't, and this is his first year, are you okay with Urban staying and just revamping everything else?
I'm just – my thing is, when it's going bad, you got to burn it up. You got to – everybody's got to go. You can't take a little piece, okay? We've tried that twice now. Think about this now. Not once, but twice. Marone was on Gus's staff. Now, they did have the little blip that we don't like talking about. And then it went crashing back to reality. And then now you've got Balky that was on Caldwell staff. And for the record, I'm pretty sure Balky, all those guys at the 49ers, especially that 2013 team,
yeah,
pretty sure they were all there before Balky got there.
But like, I mean, he still has ties to it, though.
Yeah, he has ties to it because they went there when he was there, but he didn't build it. That's my thing. I don't think he built it. Yeah, maybe Kaepernick had those couple of years, but really those 49ers teams were about that defense. And I'm pretty sure Willis and company were already there by the time he got there. So I just, and not to get too buried into the specifics, but we should just burn it up and try again.
I mean,
including Urban.
Well, not including Urban. Urban has the only reason why. He doesn't get a complete, you know, pass from me. But you know, as a rookie, you know, head coach, you have a rookie, you know, quarterback, and I just want to know what was done in preseason for them to look this discombobulated in week what 11?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, week 11 right now. What are you doing in week 11 to where, you know, receivers that have been training together, you know, since April, they still aren't on the same page as far as running routes together? Like, I want to get behind the actual – I want to understand what he's doing as far as like a coaching standpoint. Is he actually, you know, going down, you know, to the receiver's room and saying, guys, what's going on? Or is this something where he's cascading it to – you know, the wide receivers coach. Like, I want to know how involved he is. And I think only time is going to be able to tell how actually entrenched and involved. You know, some of the things that we've seen during training camp, we saw him, you know, individually working with the players, individually working with, you know, the tight ends to try to get open. Is he still doing that? Or is it just something where we're going through film and watching film and you're cascading down what you see to the wide receivers coach and expecting the wide receivers coach to, you know, figure that out? Or is this just still you just have no idea what's going on and you don't know if your running back is on the field or not on the field and you can't answer those questions?
Well, based on what we're seeing in the press conferences after the games, at a minimum, we know he's not involved actively on game day because he never can answer a question about which running back should have been in at what time or anything else.
Right. And then also another thing, too, that I have a hard time understanding is like how does he not know or how like the whole receiving thing. I just don't understand how you got people running wrong routes this late in the year. And you haven't found ways to get, you know, Vishka, you know, into, you know, that Cordarrelle Patterson slash, you know, that and what's the guys from the 49ers that destroyed us?
Debo.
Debo. Yeah, Debo. Yeah. Like you can't get him in a position and do that. Like I just don't get like how you can't see what other teams are doing with pieces that are similar to what you have and saying, all right, well, let's try to, you know, scheme in that and try to figure out how we can get the ball in this playmaker's hand, how we can, you know, get this playmaker into space. If he does the right thing and we put him in the right spots, like he should be able to be electric. I think right now, as far as Bulky goes, just to come back to him, if he is the one behind the pick, which we will find out if he's the one behind the Travis or the ETN pick. So if he was behind the ETN pick, you know, knowing that, you know, we've got James Robinson, you know, shame on him for that. If he's the person behind, you know, the talent and the scouting and, you know, picking these players when you've got, you know, all rookie players that have been made and, you know, and all rookie, you know, type players that are contributing to their team and making these things, you know, that comes on to scouting and that comes on to him because eventually he's got to make the pick. I am like so frustrated and tired of not you. And yeah, I know you can't do this in hindsight and you can't draft it in hindsight, but it seems like every time the Jaguar, and you can go back through historically and look at the Jaguars picks and there's like a sandwich. There's someone that's better than the pick. And then in between that is our pick. And then below them is somebody else who's an instant playmaker. And like, I don't understand how that happens. It happens all the time. It's never us making the right pick and then someone else and us avoiding the top two picks or the sandwich pick in between them. It's like, all right, we'll pick this person. Another team will pick this person. Jaguars pick. Bust, and then the other person picks, and it's like perennial all pro bowler. Like, I don't get it. Like, I have no idea how they continually miss on picks. They miss on, they just miss. The only thing they don't miss on right now is Saxophone Man. And if they get rid of him somehow, then I mean, that's the only thing they don't miss on. That's
yeah,
it.
That's true. Yeah. And I'm fairly confident Balky had no, you know, say in that choice. We've had Saxophone Man since season two, so now Derek, I, you know, bringing up Urban Meyer and Notre Dame and all those rumors, that kind of opened up a pretty good tangent there about the whole situation.
No, so, it's disappointing to really look at how we've gotten to this point. And in this point, what I mean is you're 2-9. Your coach is telling you some of the basic things that they're still not doing correctly. And I won't say they're basic in a sense that, oh, they're supposed to run a 5-yard hitch and they're running a go route. It's not that. Like, for instance, when he said routes, and he didn't elaborate on this, and I don't know this for sure, but I'm going to take a very good educated guess here. Is at that level of football, a lot of the receivers and quarterbacks, the routes are based off of coverage. So you could run a drag route. You could put someone in motion and run a drag route. And if the guy followed, if the wide receivers followed, you know, it's man. So you'll come back and you'll drag across the field. But if nobody goes with you and you're in motion and then you come back across the field, you really don't run a drag. Okay. You never run drag routes against the zone defense or else your receiver's going to get lit up. They'll usually stop and sit down somewhere in the zone. So that's probably what he's talking about is option routes like that, that the wide receiver and quarterback aren't on the same page. And what's funny is he says that, and mind you, he's the dingbat that didn't have Trevor Lawrence be the day one starter. He's the dingbat that was sharing reps, making him share reps with a guy that's not even on the team anymore. Okay. He's a dingbat. All right. That didn't do like from day one in camp, he should have had the receivers together and Trevor Lawrence together and say, all right, guys, here's the book. You need to figure this out. And then come back by after like the first or second preseason game, all right, what are we seeing? What are we not seeing? What are y'all comfortable with? Let me look at the tape and then get back to you the next day.
Let me ask you,
can tell
a question.
That didn't happen.
Let me ask you a question.
You can tell that didn't happen.
Okay, so what's the difference between him making you know, Trevor, the clear-cut day one starter, and, you know, handing the keys over to the franchise and not making it a quarterback competition or anything else like that, versus all the extra work that, you know, and all the Instagram stuff that we've been seeing, all these things that they have been going, you know, to Clemson and doing all these other, you know, runs and, you know, practices. What's the difference between that type of chemistry and then him making him the number one quarterback?
Because you can't simulate the game stuff even when you're just throwing with your buddies. When you're throwing with your buddies, you're just getting used to how, you know, the ball comes out. Where does it come out? Where does he like to break on certain routes? When you're in practice, that's the best place that you can simulate some form of pass rush, guys that actually are going to hit you, things like that, things that throw off timing. Because when you're in shorts and you're up in Clemson, the only thing that's going to throw off your timing is the air or looking at, you know, not focusing. And then when you're in practice, you have actual real guys that can throw off timing. And then when you're in the game, you got guys like Aaron Donald that could just take your timing and drop kick it somewhere. Okay, which is probably what he's going to do on Sunday. That's why. Their timing is all off. The routes are all off. And I think it starts from day one. That's just my opinion. I don't know. Maybe, you know, people can have insight. Well, Trevor's playing bad. Personally, I think his foot was really more hurt than he was leading on, because a lot of his balls were coming up short. Receivers are running the wrong routes, calling wrong plays, da 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 da, blah blah blah. PFF says this.
You sound like that Coach 30 dude on Twitter. He's like,
yeah,
the moment's too big, gotta piss down your leg.
Like, blah 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 blah. James Robinson's heel. Oh, but Carlos Hyde, you know, he was at Ohio State. Like, there's all this just random bull, and you can tell the timing is off. It's off.
I think a little bit of the timing could be off also, just like thinking about it too, is like, you know, right now he's throwing to Marvin Jones, who, you know, seems like to be the only. So I could see some of the stuff there, like with him and Marvin. Like, him and Marvin have a really good connection. You know, I don't know what's going on with Vishka, but I could see also with Treadwell how things could be off, because maybe they haven't had that time together. You know, they haven't had that rapport and that opportunity to kind of, you know, build that. But still, though, you've got to be – I think Urban has got to put him into more the receivers aren't getting separation, so you can't do that. So he's got to actually be a coach and become a little bit more creative and figure out how to get, you know, players and Vishka into, you know, just favorable, you know, matchups. He's got to figure out a way to say, okay, I can't trust you to go run this route. Can I trust you to take this speed option? Can I trust you to take this end around? Can I trust you to, you know, just if I put the ball in your hands, you know, from a pure just hike and direct handoff or direct snap to you, will this work? I mean, he's coming out on, I mean, and the person that was able to, I mean, he mitigated a lot of that with Agnew, but Agnew got hurt. So now we have nobody else that can really kind of create that separation and speed. But then again, though, Agnew is a kickoff returner slash DB turned into a receiver. You know what I mean? And so he has no, like, just, I don't know, man. It's just a mountain of just things that have just continued to overturn and overturn. And it's terrible.
You're on to something, though. Let's look at the team that we played 2 weeks ago, the 49ers, Deebo Samuel. He's a wide receiver. He's listed technically as a wide receiver. You know, he got 8 carries against the Jags for 70-something yards and a touchdown. What did I just say his position was? Wide receiver. Why? Because they know that obviously they had, you know, they were on like their fourth team running backs. Okay, and they ran for 171 yards. I said that a couple weeks ago, that they were going to run for a bunch of yards, even with those bunch of no-names. And outside of George Kittle and Deebo Samuel, someone please name a San Francisco 49ers wide receiver. Exactly.
Ayuk?
They figured it out. What's that?
I was going to say Brandon Ayuk, but he's a running back.
Yeah, but they figured it out. They figured out, okay, these are the cards we have, and this is how we have to play, so let's go play. And they figured it out. So if LaVisca needs to line up at tailback, because really, to be honest with you, he looks like a big tailback anyway, put him at tailback. Throw him some shovels, screens, slips, toss, sweep, do something. I don't know. Mix it up. Keep them guessing. When you don't have that type of talent, you got to play shadow games. And I'm sorry, he keeps trying to run the same stuff over and over again that eventually people are going to catch on to, and they have caught on to. So that's why I think like he's got to do a better job of Bevel, which definitely he needs to be part of the fire that's just out of here. They've got to keep him guessing. Do different
things. I think Bevel goes before Balky does. They both need to go at the same time, but I think Bevel goes before Balky does. And then I think it also is going to be someone who is I think the defense is again been playing very well, but it just seems like they're playing better than what they and it's hard to say the defense has been playing well because they still keep losing. And I know that it's not like their fault specifically of why they are losing, but they have been playing better football. I will say that. But yeah, Bevel has got to go. I think Bevel has got to be one of the people that, you know, if someone does want to see a head roll on, you know, on if we need something or some type of sacrifice, it's got to be Bevel or someone within that. And then, you know, it's got to be, you know, actually having, you know, someone with experience and really just kind of looking at what the defense and the offense, or excuse me, what the defense is giving you and what the defense has been giving other teams in the past, and you know, kind of creating a game plan off that. It doesn't look like they watch film. It really doesn't, because they come out with the same tired formations and the same tired things, and we get the same tired results, which is why I don't think that they're watching film. Like, you can't, as Daryl Bevel and Urban Meyer, you cannot be watching this and not making any adjustments throughout the season. You can't.
Their install period is trash. And what that is that's the period in which they install the game plan, and they'll usually have NFL team, I don't know, maybe 30 scripted plays at the beginning of the game to kind of feel out the defense. And out of those 30 plays, half of them will be things that they've never run, like you've never shown on tape.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
So that their install period planning is just you're right, they're terrible. Just terrible, man.
Yeah, their install plan, and then the way that they go and execute and actually go out, you know, they're starting flat. They're not, you know, going through, you know, any type of, there's no fire, there's no coming out with anything. It's just a whole bunch of just mediocre. They have the ball for, you know, X amount of seconds, and then they flip the field. So I think that they've got to figure out how to get started fast. They've got to figure out how to get, if Robinson is actually going to be, you know, if he's going to be limited into his, you know, his options and or limited, if he's going to be a pitch count going forward, then you got to find ways to get creative with, you know, maybe Jadon brings that spark. Maybe Jadon, you know, is somebody that they have to start scheming for now and start getting, you know, the hands in or the balls in the hands. I think Visca has definitely got to start taking, you know, handoffs and, you know, things from, you know, out of the backfield. The tight end situation, I mean, you know, it sucks about Dan Arnold, but, you know, O'Shaughnessy is coming back. And I think majority of it now, the shift is kind of focused over into the offense and why, you know, we're in the, you know, the situation that we're in right now as far as being competitive, and it's such a late start. You know, if there was more, even in coming from the and not going to the Falcons game, if we would have had more of an offensive spark, like in that third slash fourth quarter when they were actually moving the ball, like that would have been, you know, that would have been something that Atlanta wouldn't have been able to keep up with the entire game. So where were those plays being called within that long sustaining drive where they scored, and then where they were actually making a little bit of a march on the four and in the fourth quarter on that last drive until Visca ran the wrong route? You know, where are those things? Like if you run the wrong route in the first quarter, it's different from you running the wrong route in the fourth quarter, obviously because of the impact for it, but you shouldn't be running the wrong route anyway. But the fact that you are actually out there and trying to move the ball, you know, works. But again, too, Atlanta, Trevor threw the ball way too many times. You have got to rely on that running back. You've got to rely on – at this point, too, I'd rather see either Ozigbo or Ungabuale out there versus Carlos Hyde. I really would. I really would, dude. Like, what's there to lose? What is there to lose? We know what Carlos Hyde is.
If Beanie Wells ends up on the team coming out of retirement, then we know, like, you know, he's just gone all Ohio.
Oh, he's going to bring back Eddie George. He's going to bring back Eddie George right now. Eddie George is going to come out of retirement. Or
something like that.
George is going to come out of retirement. He's going to try to reinstate. He's going to try to find a way to get Maurice Clarett, you know, back. And that's what he's going to do. If you want your guys that, and this is the same thing that's and you mentioned it earlier or mentioned it like a couple days ago in our group chat, he's playing his guys and not the guys.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. No, you guys.
I was going to say, I don't know if you remember Steve Spurrier when he first went to the Washington football team and he brought on Shane Matthews and Danny Werfel and Jabbar Gaffney and like all those guys.
Yeah.
It's not quite as extreme as that, but I think it's reminding me of that when you guys discuss it this way.
That's what it is.
I can tell you the playbook is, that's for sure. The playbook, you know, Bevel can call the plays all day, but there's definitely, you know, a lot of wrinkles of Urban's playbook, what he likes to run in there. The only problem is you're not in college and Percy Harvin and, you know, company aren't there. And this isn't college. So he has to reinvent himself. I think if he really wants this thing to work, he needs to reinvent himself and reinvent his offense and their philosophy and how they do things. Because unfortunately, it's just not working. And we've got such an awesome talent in Trevor Lawrence. You know, we don't want him after 2 or 3 years. Like, you know, forget this, man. I need to go somewhere else. You know, we don't want that to happen. I'm not saying it is, but it could. He could get tired of, you know, going up against a cinder block wall every Sunday. Like, you know, I'm throwing the ball 45 times for 200 yards and I got a pick, or I'm running for my life, or nobody can get open. So I don't know. We're 2-9. We're about to play a team with a very good defensive line, a loudmouth corner that we all know very well. And JK3, you're going out there. That's pretty awesome, man.
One of the crazies. I guess you could say one of the crazies that's making this trip out there to SoFi. But, you know, stadiums to me are just, you know, that's just a destination for me. I've got a bucket list to see the Jags play in every stadium. So, you know, got to cross those off. But yeah, no, it's going to be exciting. I'm super excited for SoFi. I'm excited to also, you know, see the defense too. I think, you know, my shift for excitement, you know, has shifted over there because I think that LA is going to pose, you know, a pretty good threat from an offense perspective. But I think this is going to be a really good gauge to see how well they've been playing the second half of the year. I mean, you've got a lot of firepower, you know, on that LA roster, you know, with Cooper Kupp, you've got Odell Beckham, Stafford, and they're coming down I think they didn't win. They're on a three-game losing streak.
Three in November.
Yeah, three-game losing streak right now. So Cullen has probably gone through and taken a look and seen what teams are doing to make them uncomfortable in certain positions and how that. And I think the defense, you know, would be one of the options to keep us into this game. This team matched up very well against Buffalo as well. Another high powered offense that we were able to match up with really well and keep us in the game. So hopefully, you know, Cullen has kind of found that niche of what made, what's been helping the defense out these last couple or last four weeks, you know, for the Jags. So super excited to go to SoFi, man. My first time going to L.A. I've got a couple of things that are on the bucket list that I will, not bucket list, but on the to-do list there. I'm going to go to Roscoe's. I'm going to go to Randy's Donuts, while I'm there as well. It's Hollywood sign, all that stuff. So, a pretty exciting trip coming up for me. But, seeing SoFi is going to be amazing. And I can't wait to be able to share that with y'all on Twitter.
Are you going to yell anything at Jalen Ramsey? Because we'd like you to do that.
Yell at him?
Yeah.
I'm not I'm not a yeller at her fan or yeller at players. You know what I mean? Like I am because honestly, I know how big they are and it's not one of those things that I want to be able to just yell at, except Taven, yell at. except Taven. yell at, but no, man, away games are so tricky because you got to feel out the environment. And majority right. of the away games that I've gone to have been hostile environments. So you got to think about Pittsburgh. You got to think about, this will probably be a hostile environment because they just don't want you going there. Kansas City, hostile environment. So, you got to really pick and choose your battles because there are more of them than there are, your team there. Sure. So, yeah, so it's like especially sitting on the Jags. Score, I will make a sign though. If the Jags score, that's all fair. And, if they score, of course, I scream and yeah. That's
but even that, it's like you sort of have to like do it, but then not be excessive about it.
Oh no! Right? Oh no! Okay. Don't let them. Don't let the Jaguars get up and like have the lead for a substantial amount of time because that's when I really start chirping at fans, not at players. But that's when I really start chirping. So, I think overall, man, it's going to be a great. I think it's going to be a great experience. Great. Atmosphere. It's just cool. I'm excited, man. We fly out early in the morning and I'm just super excited about it. But yes, I will, be there loud and proud. And if there are any other Jags fans that are going, to LA or any other fans that live out in LA or that are making that trip, one thing that I did find out when I went to Kansas City, there was a bunch of Jags fans that were on the West Coast or West Side or West of the U.S. that kind of met in the middle. So maybe this is an opportunity for, those fans that live in like, Colorado, fans that live in California, fans that live in Nevada, Utah, any of those places to really kind of make that trip, to see them play live. So, sure. You never know.
Well, you did a good job on the Down by the Bank in the Pittsburgh playoff game of posting some videos and pictures and everything like that. So we have a commitment from you, I think, that you're going to do the same for this game, right?
Oh yeah, for sure, man. It's awesome. And I can't wait. I love sharing the travels.
All right. Well, cool. Anything that we wanted to hit on from the home game experience and Niners and Falcons games? I don't really have anything too crazy. I think the San Francisco fans certainly traveled much more than the Atlanta fans. I don't know about you, JK3, but I don't think the Falcons fans had quite as much. Granted, they still were pretty good compared to the Jaguars fans, in my opinion, which is just a whole different topic. But it wasn't the same as the other home games against Buffalo and San Francisco. It was a little
lighter. It has been. It was a relief to see it not as as packed. But I think Atlanta is one of those fan bases that is, I'm sure, and this is no offense to any Atlanta Falcons fan that is listening to this podcast, but, I kind of feel like they are a, kind of fair weather, casual kind of, you know, kind of franchise, in my opinion. You know, I feel I put them in the same, you know, I kind of put them in the same category as like the Giants. You know, I kind of put them in the same category as the who else can I think of that the Skins or the WFT, you know, right now. The Panthers, you know, they're kind of within that. Some people can probably put that within the Jaguars as well. But I, you know, I, from a perspective of traveling and going to seeing games and, you know, judging that by people that I know who are fans of quote unquote teams, I know like two Falcons fans and one was there. But I will give a shout out though, going back to the 49ers game, you know, the team that I work with, at my place of employment, which I don't really want to disclose. Oh, well, where I work, you know, we've got a bunch of different football fans and different teams there. So it was awesome to really get some of those, you know, those team members out to an NFL game. And so, yeah, no, awesome, awesome job, you know, getting different fans there. And a lot of people say that they love our stadium. So I have no idea.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's actually because if you look at the fan cam thing for every game that my daughter and I have been to this year, we always sit near away fans. And it's almost weird, honestly. It's like we just picked the wrong section or something. But
yeah, you do sit on the visiting side.
Yeah, we do. But it's like, you know, there's still a good contingent of Jags fans, but just in our couple of rows, we're always surrounded by them. So it's odd. But they do all have really good things to say about the stadium. Always the video boards, they're always really impressed with. You know, they always get a kick out of the pool stuff and always seem to think they can just like go up there and get in it. Like it's just like some regular public pool.
They're always impressed with Jacksonville. They're like, does he do that every game? And it's like, yes. Well, we don't know how many more games he's going to do it since he got stuck.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask about because we were late getting up there, and so we didn't see him jump for like the first time ever. And I thought I saw on Twitter that he like had to land in the 400 section or something.
Yeah,
yeah, he did. He did.
That's wild. That's scary, right?
Yeah, no, that's that would be nerve wracking. Hey, but Corey, did you know at the last game, Samuel was at the game? Samuel Jackson.
Oh yeah, I did see that. There. Yeah, I saw man. that retweet.
I'm telling you right now, I thought I saw Shaft. I thought I saw Shaft, man, at the game. I was kind of like, wow, man.
Didn't JK3 invite him? Didn't you have a connection to Samuel? So
he's got a connection. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a connection with him. All right.
Your father is Samuel L. Jackson. Yeah. That's the connection.
Yo, when he sent the picture, I'm sitting there looking at it. I'm like, oh, Mace Windu looking like, man, yeah, he looks like Samuel Jackson.
I get it all. And the funny thing about my dad is that he has like a resting angry face. And he's like the nicest guy on earth. But he just always looks mad. And like everyone is always just like, man, I want to ask him, but you know, your dad looks like Samuel L. Jackson. I'm like, tell him. And he hates that. That's the only thing that he hates. But yeah, no, man, it was awesome to get my, you know, my parents out to the game. They got some type of lucky. They met some person out in the tailgate that I had never met before. And he offered them tickets and they sat front row.
Wow.
So, yeah, they were supposed to sit next to me, but they sat front row. So and then my mom is retired. She's worked. She worked like 40 years. And so now she's living her best life. He's like, yeah, I think I'm going to have to get my season tickets are going to be here next year. And I'm like, oh, okay. What a flex. That's
funny. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Even though the attendance isn't great, don't you still get the feeling that when the Jags were showing life that the crowd still gets loud, they still get still into there. It. And that's what makes it so much more crushing when we have all those instances that just beat you down during the game where it's like, we'll have a good stop or a good play, and then there's a penalty, and there's a penalty, and there's a penalty, or there's you know whatever, and it beats the life out of you throughout the game. But I tell you, when we're you know getting after it, the fans are still getting loud. I mean, I don't know. I was kind of proud of the Jags fan base in that last game, just because I felt like even though the you know stadium wasn't like packed or anything, it was a pretty decent little turnout.
You put an average team on that field. You put a 7-10 team on that field, and you'll hear that stadium get loud.
Yeah.
You put a 10-7 team on that field. Con's going to need a bigger stadium.
Yeah.
Just saying. Because we have passionate football fans here.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, people, and this is where it gets frustrating talking about this, is, gosh, doesn't it feel like we've had the same conversation for years now on this podcast about, at this point in the season, being bummed out and just completely exhausted? Like, the fans are there. If they could just, like you said, it doesn't even have to be a 500 team. It could be right under 500, and everybody would be psyched. I mean, the expectations are low. You know what I mean? They're very low, and we can't even get to that, you know?
Man. But, hey, well, JK3, man, enjoy your trip out there. I definitely think that Aaron Donald's going to eat our lunch, and he's going to go up against Ben Barch.
He's a big man.
Ben, you better get ready. Hopefully Andrew Norrell can help you out. Obviously, they got I like to call them Coke bottle glasses. oh, gosh.
Von Miller.
Von Miller. Have you ever seen him when he wears his glasses? Them things are thick.
This is the second time. He's played the Jags this year.
Yeah. And so, you know, put a blocker on him. Yeah, he might have lost a step, or he's not playing, whatever. But you still got to put a blocker on him. Don't get in. Please, for the love of all, Trevor, I know you don't listen to us. Maybe you do. We don't know. I hope you do. But do not throw an interception to Jalen.
Oh, my God.
Please. If we lose, I'm expecting that. But do not throw a pick to Jalen.
Yeah, that would suck.
Okay, because then he's going to say something on Instagram or social media, and we'll have a 50,000 people say something to him, and then he'll quote some type of devotional and saying, I love you all, which we know is crap, okay, coming from him.
Devotional.
No, because that's what he does. It's like he runs his mouth, and then the next morning he's like, you know, quoting a Bible verse or a devotional. I'm like, man, pick one or the other. You can't pop off like that and then turn around and be like, oh, but that's like, you know, going to the club on Saturday night, being out till 4 and being in church Sunday morning.
Yeah.
So, but anyway.
But only the church that serves boneless wings.
Oh, jeez.
No. We're not a boneless congregation. Yeah. We are not a boneless congregation.
All right. So one last thing, just because I think we've made a habit of doing this each week. But Derek, since you were just speaking on it, 2-9 record now, what are we looking at after Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you don't have to like hype us up. I mean, tell me what you really think. You know what I mean?
I mean, 2-10.
Okay, great.
How do you want me to spin it? 2-10. And I say it not just because of the performance of the Jags, but for the fact that LA's lost 3 straight. Okay. Mm-hmm. They're trying to make a Super Bowl run. They're not trying to make the playoffs. They're trying to make a Super Bowl run. And if they don't win this game, I'm pretty sure they're going to be 7-5. Is that right? Are they 7-4? They're going to be like 7-5 or something like that, and they're going to be in real trouble. And they're supposed to remember, they traded, you know, all their picks. They signed OBJ. They gave Jalen all that money. You know, they got Matt Stafford in the offseason. So they're going to be scratching and clawing, because if they lose to us, which, hey, we'll be the first to take it, okay, our fan base. But if they lose us, then they're going to have major problems. Their owners are going to be like, wait a minute, hold on now. Like, what? Like, huh? Hold on, man, I got to come downstairs. Sean, what you doing? Jalen, why are you running your mouth like we just lost? So, but 2-10, that's my prediction.
All right, 2-10. JK3, where are you at on it?
Oh, 2-10.
Okay, great. Good discussion. Oh, what a brutal season once again. It would be
kind of brutal season. It's been brutal for
brutal life. It's been
brutal life. You know how hard it is? You know how hard it is to talk about a team that is just mistake that, I mean, yo, this is us. This is it. We're here. This is us, man.
You guys are pretty optimistic though, because I will say, like, this is even the last episode we recorded, there was some positive spin. Like, I think Derek, you were still trying to like make it sound like we were going to have wins, but now you both sound very defeated.
Bro, the only thing that's positive going into this game is that the Rams have lost 3 games in a row. That's the only thing that's positive. After that, you know, I mean, this was one of the games that we looked at the calendar and thought that we were, you know, didn't have a shot because we had Atlanta and we also had the Niners, who we thought we had shots against. So with them, it's like, okay, we had a shot against the Niners. We saw the Niners being a threat, but you know, there was a way that we could possibly, you know, kind of hold them. Atlanta, okay, Atlanta's coming in. Same boat. There's no way we're not as good as the Falcons. We've got Trevor. They've got Matty Ice. You know, blah, blah, blah. Here we are.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. Sometimes the Rams, and this is why I think they've lost 3 straight, and it actually plays into our favor. Sometimes they get away from their running game, and they just keep throwing it. And throw it and throw it. And it's not, they could be winning and they'll still do it. They used to do it with Jared Goff all the time. The reason why we beat Buffalo, besides them making a ton of mistakes, is they didn't run the ball. They probably throw for every 3 times they throw, they run 1. The Rams show similar characteristics like that. They definitely can. Now, obviously, if you look at the game plan will tell you to run the ball against us. Let's see if they stay true to that or if they start getting pass happy, because that's what we really want. We want them to get pass happy. Yeah, we got the rookies and yeah, we got the, the terrible safety. Can't even say his name. It's so late. But we want our defensive line going up against their O-line trying to get to Matt Stafford, because he can be shaken. Matt Stafford might be a good quarterback, but he's no like, you know, Tom Brady type. Okay. He can be shaken very easily if we can hit him. And so we'll see. I mean, I'm still picking 2-10, but the Rams sometimes do get away from that running game. When they get away from it is when they have majority of their problems, especially if OBJ is over there bitching and whining that he hadn't got the ball thrown to him.
All right. Well, I think with that, we'll leave it there. Record again after next week. Hopefully, maybe it'll work out. We'll be 3-9 and we'll pick up a win. But either way, JK3 will keep us up to date live from a fan's perspective in the stadium. Let us know how it looks, how the opposing fans are treating him. Who knows? Maybe he'll end up on a viral video getting into a fight with LA fans. That would be interesting.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that, don't man. Don't say that. Don't do what? That. Nope.
I can't jinx you. You just choose not to do that and you'll be fine.
No, I mean, so jinxing you can't
jinx me. You can't jinx me. We ain't going to get into the reasons why. Look, don't go out there. Nope.
You just did.
Okay, well.
Just take it and walk away.
If it happens, just make sure somebody records it so we got something to watch. But anyway, so we'll leave it there. If you guys are on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and review. Give us a follow. Oh, yeah.
Donate to that link too, man.
Yeah. Benjamin Saxophone Man Purdy. I believe we picked up some more donations while we were recording, some more tweets. Blythe had a tweet to us a second ago, just talking about how everybody what's her last name? Brum Levy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That Blythe. Like, I know multiple Blythes.
Oh, okay. Really?
I didn't know. No, I don't.
Just encouraging, and I actually encourage people to do this, go through all the replies and the quote tweets that we've seen on that topic, because there's some really good stories in there and just, you know, super nice comments and people, you know, just mentioning how, you know, just the times they've interacted with him in the past, like you said, not even at the stadium, but other events too. So it's kind of cool. But yeah, jump on the GoFundMe page, drop $5 on there, or you know, whatever you're comfortable with doing. And we'll try to coordinate something to support him, hopefully at the next home game on December 19th, a little Christmas gift. We're also on Spotify and Google Podcasts as well, and we're part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.